Hey everyone, I'm Emily O'Sullivan, a senior psychology major from Haverford College, and I'd like to welcome you back to our podcast on the neurobiology of sexual behavior. Today's episode will be focusing on comparative models of sexual behavior. Before we start discussing the particulars of sexual behaviors of comparative models, we're going to begin with some background about comparative models in general to make sure everyone's on the same page. While I would normally like to have someone here with me to interview for you, I wasn't able to get anyone in today, so instead I decided to conduct a little survey. In preparation for today's show, I asked some fellow Haverford College students who are science majors with lab experience a few questions about comparative models, so I could take this opportunity to clear up some common misconceptions about the topic. One of the questions I asked in the survey was what people thought the term comparative model meant in regards to research using animals. Unsurprisingly, based on the name, multiple people thought that comparative models would be animals that could be easily compared to humans. While this idea is not always incorrect, I think it's important to convey what scientists really mean when they call something a comparative model. Comparative model is often a title given to any animals or organisms used for research that are not considered model organisms. While you may not have a complete list of model organisms in your head right now, I'm sure you can think of one or two examples. But just in case, some common ones are fruit flies, rats, and zebrafish. While it may still be difficult to make a connection between many model organisms and humans, model organisms are considered as such because they are commonly used in research. Comparative models are also not something specific to the study of neurobiology, sexual behavior, or even psychology. They are used in a number of disciplines. However, the fact that research is more commonly conducted in model organisms does not mean that research conducted in comparative models is any less real or scientific, or that the results are unimportant, even if they are not directly applicable to humans. Now that we've all got some common knowledge due to that very brief background on comparative models, let's take an even briefer look at the term neurobiology of sexual behavior. When looking at the term neurobiology of sexual behavior, most people could probably figure out what it's getting at. Neurobiology, after all, is the study of the brain. So we're looking at how the brain affects sexual behavior. However, the term itself is not the complicated part. The complicated part is how the brain is affecting sexual behavior. It can do this through the differences present in the male and female brains, hormones, and other neurotransmitters, and is a topic studied by many psychologists. At this point, I've presented two pieces of the puzzle, so let's bring them all together and talk about some of the sexual behaviors we see in comparative models. Based on the very general definition of comparative models that I gave earlier, you may be thinking that there must be tons of different animals that are considered comparative models, and you'd be right. You'd also be right to think that within all these different animals, there must be many different examples of sexual behavior. While I could sit and list out a bunch of examples of sexual behavior in comparative models, we would run out of time before getting a chance to talk about how these behaviors are affected by the animal's neurobiology. One comparative model that is commonly studied is fish, but not just any fish, sex-changing fish. While sex-changing fish may sound pretty specific, there are multiple species that have been confirmed to change sex. Some species, such as clownfish, have male-to-female sex change, while other species, such as wrasses, have female-to-male sex change. A good example of sexual behavior being strongly governed by the brain and hormones in a comparative model is the study by Todd et al. From 2017 that looked at some of the sexual behaviors of bluehead wrasses. Bluehead wrasses live in groups with one dominant male, called a terminal phase male, and multiple females and non-dominant males, also known as initial phase males. One of the reasons these fish have interesting behaviors to study is because when the terminal phase male, who's the head of the hierarchy, disappears for whatever reason, either the female can change sex and become a terminal phase male, or an initial phase male can go through a sexual polymorphism in which they will become a terminal phase male. The researchers in this study used RNA sequencing to look at genes being expressed in the brain and gonads for each of the three phenotypes, and were able to find significant differences. They were able to prove for the first time in any species that the initial phase males, who looked just like the females, had their own signature, which was different from both the terminal phase males and females, and was present in both the brain and the gonad. The data they gathered also confirmed the thought that initial phase males' brains were actually more like the female brains than they are like the terminal phase male brains. It was found that the reason for this was a downregulation of androgenesis genes in the gonad, which could account for some of the genomic differences between initial phase and terminal phase males. While these findings are not easily relatable to humans for multiple reasons, including the fact that we're thought to only have two phenotypes, male and female, and also the fact that humans cannot change sex without medical intervention, they are still significant. These researchers were able to investigate the plasticity of the brains and genes of the races like never before. And who knows, maybe it will lead to a breakthrough in research that will benefit humans one day. All right, folks, that's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening in, and don't forget to tune in next time to learn more about the neurobiology of sexual behavior.